Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars pop culture in the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I am Ken Napsok in a purple beanie if you're watching my face.
And I'm Jennifer Landa in my home.
And I'm also have a purple beanie somewhere on my body. No, I don't. I don't know why I said that. I apologize. It's early in Monday morning and I'm trying to wake myself up. We are excited to be here talking about your Cues. This is one of our episodes, Cues of the Everything, where we take questions about Star Wars and life and other pop culture. This particular episode, we have two Star Wars questions, but I think those Star Wars questions will lead us into talks of life. As always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Dark Disciple by Christy Golden. A very, very good book. Hey, you know what? And it's based on some episodes of The Clone Wars that were written by Katie Lucas, which is a wonderful segue to say we have another episode of Jedi Beat out as well. More on that in a moment. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audiobook. Jennifer, do you want to tell people about the new episode of Jedi Beat?
Sure. So we have a new episode up on Katie Lucas, the life, the works, and where is she now? Which, that was hard to find. took a lot of digging. It was fascinating to go back and revisit her work on the Clone Wars and her life with her dad, George Lucas, and what that must have been like, and him as a single dad. So it was pretty fascinating to look back at that.
Yeah, and this is an episode, you did a version of this episode many, many years ago for an audio version of Jedi Beat, which you obviously have been revising. You've been special editioning yourself.
Yo, yes.
In a beautiful way. and it was just such a great kismet that we were talking about Katie Lucas again as we're all waiting for the reappearance of Asajj Ventress, a character that's so connected to her.
Mm-hmm. I know. We're all waiting with bated breath to see what is Asajj's appearance going to be like on the back end. What is she going to do?
What's her deal? Yeah. What's she all about? We are thrilled, as always, of course, to talk a little bit about what other stuff is going on. So, Ken, do you want to talk a little bit about our patron goal, our Patreon goal?
I do, in the era of the Ventress countdown. I can't wait. Our Patreon goal is very close to being reached at 400 paid supporters on our Patreon page. We'll be unlocking commentary of Star Wars films. Yeah, we've done some in the past, but it was the past, and we're going to start again. And once we reach that goal, patrons will have a choice on what we cover. We'll do an old-fashioned poll, all right? We'll put some marbles in a jar, and you get to help us decide. And also, we want to remind you that on Patreon, our page there, patreon.com/4Center, is 007 Center. We took, Joseph and I, it took nearly 3 hours to go through the glory that is Casino Royale, one of my favorite talks we've ever done here. And the second episode of that, Quantum of Solace, is coming later this month. It's exclusive to all patrons, or it's available in our shop. And don't forget, Bad Batch going strong, 5 episodes in at this point. We are actually going to be on Alex and Molly's Clone Zone live show this week following Bad Batch, but you can discuss it with Star Wars fans just like you in our Discord through our Patreon page. So there's our asks.
Yeah, nice asks, everybody. And now is the time in the show where we catch up just a little bit on our adventures of the week. If it's life stuff, if Star Wars touched our lives in any way. Jennifer, what were your adventures this week?
I edited literally every waking moment I had. I edited, and that was really challenging with my kids, especially yesterday. Excuse me. I would edit like 2 seconds. I'd try and find a picture. Mom, can we make a smoothie? I'd come back, be like, where was I? It was like a joke at some point. And I'm like, I've done 5 seconds of footage, children. I need to edit. So yeah, I just basically kind of feel like a mole in a hole editing. No.
I understand. I've been working on a new short film, doing editing stuff and music stuff. And sometimes you feel like you've just been through a battlefield after working for 8 hours and dealing with the interruptions and finding your place again. And they're like, let's sit back and look at what I have wrought. So, 4 seconds, 8 hours for 4 seconds is what I've wrought today.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm glad you highlight that you kind of. You need a little break, right? Bathroom, food, whatever. For me, I take the dogs out in the backyard, and then you sit back down, and you're like, where was I? What was I doing? I've lost all momentum.
Who am I? Why am I here? Yep. All that great stuff. Ken, did you edit anything or get interrupted by children this week?
Yeah, if you count my ASMR videos, I did, but that's fun. Oh my God, I did get interrupted by children. To explain, I won't go to the whole story. I had the pleasure of hanging out with some friends Saturday night. We did one of those let's hit Sunset Strip. I haven't done that in a long time and just went to the Rainbow Room, which I haven't been in 20 years, where last time I was there, Lemmy, God bless him, was alive and walking around. And it's a great spot. I sent Joseph a picture. We sat right behind a table at a table that was I was right behind a Frank Sinatra shadow box with a record on display. It was great.
A shocking one, because as I texted Ken, it's from his later period where he's trying to compete with the kind of music that would actually be played at the Rainbow Room. So it almost seems cruel of like, here's when the old man was trying to, you know, compete with the Beatles and rock and roll.
And that was fun. There was some Star Wars talk going on at the table. But it was with people who work in the industry. And I didn't want to hear any of it. So I've never chewed sliders louder.
Who knows?
So there's that. But anyways, we were going to the Whiskey to see a Van Halen cover band. And we walk over, about 6 of us, all middle-aged fools, walking over trying to relive our youth. And as we're going in, Whiskey doesn't tell you when the bands go on until you get there. And as we turn the corner, as we're going in, I go, hey, guys, Atomic Punks, they don't go on until 11:30. It was 7. It was 7 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
And we walk in to the Whiskey, Jim Morrison's former stomping grounds. Well, I turned to the right, and there were 6 13-year-olds on stage playing music.
What?
What had ended up happening is it was like the School of Rock school finale show.
Oh,
and all the bands were like 16 or younger. And some of them really damn good, to be clear. And then the band was going on late. So we ended up leaving. So our night, Joseph, was interrupted by kids.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the Whiskey a Go-Go seems like it was funny to like have heard of it, and it's legendary. Like it's one of the circles of hell. Like, was the sort of like, it's so rough. It's where rock and roll comes from. It was, you know, born out of Satan's pores, was the attitude that I received as a child liking heavy metal music in the Midwest. Yes. And then I finally went there to see a band from the Midwest, and the opener was, these 14-year-olds who were like music prodigies, and their dads were like talking about their BMWs and take, you know, it felt so like, this feels like a rich person's just like hangout, not, and it was fascinating.
Yeah, we looked around at one point, and someone in our group said it rather loud for everyone to hear, even over the music. He was like, I think we're the only ones here not related to the bands. And but like I said, we're probably be listening to some of these bands in 3-4 years, right? Like, they're really talented, but it was just something special about like having a 14-year-old kid get on stage at the Whiskey, and he literally says, now we're doing Paradise City. And I'm like, I don't know if you know that. I don't know if you should be singing that.
Oh my gosh. It's like American Idol. Never sing Whitney Houston.
Yep. I'll have another cigarette, but I can't see.
To Paradise City. Like, oh no, kid. That's not,
A few more years. Have another menthol flavored vape pen.
I'm so troubled.
So it was all good. And the night ended with me almost shoulder checking Martin Scorsese at the Soho House. It was stupid, silly, but it was fun. Good night.
Ah, wow.
Well, the closest I got to rock and roll was playing bongos and my neighbor banging on the wall because I was trying to make some music for my horror film. And I got some bongos that my dad gave me out of storage, you know, have my little recording set up and was playing some bongos like boom, 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 boom. So that was pretty rock and roll. It was pretty edgy.
That's pretty cool. No, Ed, you got the broom. Yeah. You got the broom. Boom, boom, boom. That's great.
Oh, yeah. I got the broom and I got the recording. So I'm going to see if I can work it into the film of like the boom, boom, boom of the neighbor.
I love that. It's good for you.
That will be the solid beat throughout the film. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my Star Wars related adventure was I was having a lot of fun doing sound effects stuff for a movie. I love doing the sound design stuff and the Foley stuff and just going into my own bathroom and throwing things around. That's great. There's a fight in a bathroom. So just like, what if I just knock crap over in my own bathroom? And it always makes me think of Ben Burtt in that spirit. Ben Burtt, obviously just like an amazing artist, but that spirit of that first Star Wars film of Lucas finding this other guy who is an absolute nut for adventure serials and pulp films and Ben Burtt and going, go wild, kid. Go record whatever you want. And just the spirit of fun and ingenuity that is baked into the beginning of Star Wars sound. I always think of that and trying to remind myself, like, there are no rules. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Find out what works.
It's amazing. I love that. Good for you. And it makes me think of one of your very early episodes of Jedi Beat about Ben Burtt that maybe a season 2 of the video version. I'm going to push for it.
And it's great that you're, Joseph, that you're physically doing it, that you're creating the sounds. You're not trying to just manipulate it in our computers, which a lot, it's a lot easier in some sense, but there's nothing like that real sound.
Yeah, it's so much fun to just look around and go, these are the limited items I have in my home, you know, and sometimes making the sound be the actual thing that is on screen, like thwapping your hand against the wall when somebody thwaps their hand against the wall. And then things like fire of just like, fire doesn't sound like what we think it sounds like, you know, like most fire is crinkling plastic. And if fire isn't on the screen, you're like, why is plastic crinkling? But if fire is on the screen, you're like, good fire sound. And like just weird stuff like that is so fun to play with.
Love that.
Other life adventure, just very quickly, is I watched the Oscars. I'm not going to waste any time on various opinions about things that won or didn't win, which this is not Star Wars, but it is pop culture. And just the way that our lives come together, there was the performance of I'm Just Ken by Ryan Gosling. And the actor currently playing the Doctor from Doctor Who was in Barbie, so he was there dancing, and they had Slash pop up as a surprise guest in at least one frame of film of Slash from Guns N' Roses and the Doctor from Doctor Who together. And it was like, I made this joke on social media, like, that's the lonely center of the Venn diagram I was very alone in my teens. And now,
oh my gosh,
that's look where we are.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. It was wonderful. That was one of the only things I did catch. I made sure to catch that clip. Obviously, finally, after all these years, my name has value, but it was amazing. And Wolfgang and Slash got him.
Yeah. Oh, so wow. I missed that.
Ugh. It's worth just pulling up. It's
yeah, so I'll find a clip. Yeah.
So fun, so well staged, all that mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get into some hardcore Star Wars here on our Star Wars podcast. We got two great questions from our patrons on Patreon. This first one comes to us from Addie Clark. And to be clear, we ask people when we ask for questions to please give us a little bit of the background. Why are you asking this question? Is it personal to you? So sometimes people do write kind of essays, which we really appreciate. And Addie shared her feelings and her journey. So this is a little bit longer. So sit back, relax, and enjoy these thoughts from Addie. Here we go. Hey there, Force Center crew. I have a very simple question. Do you ever think we will see justice for Padme on screen? Okay, maybe not so simple, says Addie. Some context or an essay from me. I am in a weird spot of being between two generations of Star Wars fans. In 1997, my father, who lined up to see Star Wars when it came out in theaters of May 1977, purchased the special edition VHS tapes of the original trilogy, and that was the first time I saw Star Wars. I immediately fell in love with the story, the characters, and even wrote fan fiction about Han and Leia before I even knew what the concept of fan fiction was. 2 short years later, The Phantom Menace was released. I didn't see it in a movie theater, but eventually saw it on VHS and loved the movie, having no concept of the fact that people thought it was terrible. And in particular, I loved Natalie Portman's portrayal of the strong, willful queen, Padme Amidala. Fast forward 3 years to the premiere of Attack of the Clones, incidentally, my favorite Star Wars movie. I was so excited because this was going to be the first Star Wars movie I got to see in a movie theater, and I actually won tickets to a special advanced fan screening by calling into my local radio station. At 13 years old, I was swept up in the love story of Padme and Anakin with absolutely no regard to how bad the dialogue was. I was once again enthralled by Natalie Portman's portrayal of the strong Senator Amidala, who stood up against corruption, fought for what she believed in, and fought for the man she loved while wearing some pretty spectacular outfits, I might add. Fast forward another 3 years to Revenge of the Sith, which remains one of my favorite Star Wars movies, even if my favorite Star Wars character got relegated to nothing more than a barefoot and pregnant woman who died because the man she loved broke her heart. I try not to think about that too much, and I do cling to the deleted scenes in the storyline that could have been about how she helped Bail and Mon Mothma start the rebellion, but it seems ever since then, the series as a whole, in live-action storytelling, has been reticent to even say her name. I came late to the Clone Wars. I only watched the series when we were going to get a season 7 on Disney Plus, so the rehab that the series did for Padme was not evident to me for many, many years, and I had to live with the two strong films of a willful queen and senator who stood up for what she believed in, and a third film where she died of a broken heart, and it was what it was. I'm a woman with a PhD in chemistry, which means I stand in a lot of rooms and have to convince other people that I belong there. And I call on the strength of my favorite strong female heroines often to do that convincing. But it bothers me that Padme has not celebrated the other ways that heroines of Star Wars like Ahsoka, Leia, Rey, and Hera are celebrated both in the fandom and on screen. The E.K. Johnston books are some of my favorite of new canon, but they're books. Kenobi came the closest when Obi-Wan tells Leia that she's wise and discerning and kind-hearted because of her mother. I cried, and I cry on every rewatch, but would it have killed him to say her name? As I think you all mentioned in your review of Rise of Skywalker, would it have been so bad for Palpatine to mention how he had been thwarted by the Princess of Alderaan, just like her mother before her? All I want is for someone to mention her by name. Passing references are fine, but we deserve an acknowledgement of the mother of the heroes of the galaxy and a strong, willful woman in her own right. Why don't you think we get it? Hashtag justice for Padme. Thank you for toughing it out through this long-winded essay. I'm grateful to all of you for everything you do in the entertainment you provide me on long runs and traffic-filled commutes. All the best, Addie. Addie, thank you very, very much for this great essay. We love hearing people's perspectives. It's been one of the biggest delights of doing Force Center. It's so easy to get locked into your perspective, and it's so rewarding to realize how so many of our perspectives are based on where we were in life when we first encountered Star Wars, what else was going on in our lives. So we absolutely love hearing stories like this of exactly what age you were for the prequels, where were you at, and why they hit you the way they did at the time. It's absolutely great. Jennifer, what's your big overall reaction to Addie's thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts.
Good.
A lot of thoughts. I don't know. I don't want to start with the heavy stuff yet, because I do believe that there is a psychological reason to why she is not mentioned.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just acknowledge this. And there's a couple of names and words that are not really mentioned that often right now. Mm-hmm. One of them is Jar Jar. Mm-hmm. One is Padme. And the other is midichlorians, as we've talked about. I am sure that there's a reason why this is the case, but I'll pass it to you guys. One last thing I'll say is maybe because of her death, right? Mm. Like that, you can't retcon that. You can't have her come back to life. And so it makes it complicated on how, and Natalie Portman's still alive. Like it just becomes a little bit more complicated, I think. Unless you're in that timeline.
Yeah. The returning to screen thing is an interesting thing that we can definitely talk about. But the just literally saying her name. Yeah. As we've talked about with the M count, that feels a little like being gun shy. And I know a lot of us have joked about, just say it, you coward, say midichlorians. But I do almost feel like, it makes a little bit of in-world sense to me of, we don't want, if any of this very secret communication happens to get picked up, we don't want anybody to know what we're talking about when we say M count, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, I can kind of justify it that way. It almost feels like a joke between, Favreau and Filoni about like, okay, this is going to be all about midichlorians, but in deference, we won't say it. Specifically for this, and then we can get into some bigger picture stuff. I absolutely agree with Addie about the Kenobi moment being beautiful. I think it was the biggest justice for Padme. And I feel like I had that initial reaction of say her name, but I feel like that's the story is that this is as far as Obi-Wan can go, in my opinion, of he can talk to her about the qualities of her parents, but he can't say anything about where they came from. Like even a first name of Padme is like, that's a danger to her to know where she really came from. So I feel like there's this kind of bittersweetness of the Kenobi thing where it's like, just say her name. But I also feel like it makes sense in story to me why Padme isn't actually said. Ken, where do you want to start with this? Where do your thoughts go in terms of this essay?
First of all, I'd say to Addie, what I say to a lot of my friends sometimes when they do wonderful tweet threads or send me an email, I'm like, this is a script for a video. What are you doing?
Addie, start
a YouTube channel. This is a great essay. Addie's, this is a wonderful look at this situation. And I guess I'll start too where I'm with you on the M count thing, Joseph. It definitely seems like a negotiation between John and Dave, right? Like maybe Dave was like, "Say midichlorians," and no.
Right.
But the Obi-Wan moment, it was like, but I think you're right. If you want to play in story, you could say maybe that. I'm with you too, or with Addie too. And I think Joseph, I think you and I maybe touched upon this, and I know it was something that was on your heart too, of just like, Rise of Skywalker, you couldn't even say or bleep a name. And I'm a defender of not only that movie, but of a lot of Terrio's writing it and everything. But that's like, you can't do the conclusion of these nine films and not say that the mother of it all is that's still kind of a little moral wound that exists over that film.
We talked about it in, I think, our initial interview or review discussion of Rise of Skywalker. I think for me, I thought that the film I love the film, and I think it did a good job of having enough little moments of celebrating the journey, because this is the final Skywalker saga film of, the Chewie medal and whatever number of years that the festival happens.
Yeah, every 42.
Every 42. Yeah. There are these little nods to the legacy, and I felt like find a way to nod to Padme because she is, being left out of the legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I start. We love this character. We think Padme is the steadfast heart of it all. And we're absolutely in agreement that the Clone Wars does so much wonderful work. And but it's just frustrating too. Even, you know, I remember Clone Wars season 7, I had David come out and said, yeah, I knew I wasn't gonna have a lot of Padme, so I made sure I tried to put something in there. I felt bad, you know, and it's like, well, but why? Yeah, what? Why? The Revenge of the Sith thing, you could probably spend hours talking about, as much as I love the prequels. But yeah, and you know, George makes an artistic decision that he felt, no, I needed to focus on Anakin and I cut all this. Got it. The death will be debated, and I think rightfully so, or at least the manner of it, rightfully so. Addy describing it kind of bluntly, but I think perfectly in a way of what it kind of felt like to a lot of folks. And so, yeah. It is justice for Padme, I still think, is something that needs to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe let's talk a little bit about the past, since Addy shared so clearly about her journey with Padme. I thought that might be interesting to talk a little bit about our own past with the character, and then we can get into answering Addy's question. For me, when the prequels first came out, and I loved parts of them, but I was also consumed by not the dark side, really, but the grumpy side of my generation, and some things that were different than I expected and all that. We've talked about it many times. There are things I love, things I wrestled with. It was initially kind of Padme neutral, and I think that was partially because of my age. You know, Leia had meant so much to me in so many different ways. I saw myself as Obi-Wan. I think if I was just like a little younger and saw myself as Anakin, I would have obsessed on Padme in a different way. Because I would have been seeing it through those relationship eyes, the way Addy is talking about seeing Padme and Anakin's relationship through seeing yourself. And I remember getting to Revenge of the Sith and liking the film so much, but feeling also bummed out that there wasn't as much Padme, and really loving those deleted scenes when the disc came out. And then over the years of doing Force Center and really embracing what I love about the prequels, in particular watching Attack the Clones and just realizing Padme is this fascinating character who is unambiguously the hero. That it's just amazing the way that she's crafted in the prequels and then in the Clone Wars animated series as well. Like, she has her challenges, she has her conflicts, she has to make compromises, but I think she's a fascinating character because so often stories of any kind, but particularly stories that deal with politics, really spend a lot of time just pointing out, like, here are the problems. And like, you're like, yep, is right, there's problems, and ooh, everybody's flawed and conflicted, and it's like, okay, what do we do with that? In Padme, I think we're given a character who is almost always right, who is a beacon for, like, well, this is how you should handle it. You should debate. Sometimes you have to compromise, but you have this moral core of, there are some things I simply cannot compromise on, and if necessary, I absolutely will take action to defend myself and to defend this absolute moral core. And Padme doesn't come off to me as this like absolutely perfect character. She wrestles and she has doubts and, you know, victories and failures and all those things. But in terms of like, well, how could have the tragedies of the prequel era been averted if everybody from the Senate to the Jedi to Anakin individually had listened to Padme, the tragedies would have been averted. So it's amazing to have a hero who feels, to me, well-developed, realistic, but is also kind of an answer to that question of like, well, how should we navigate these dark waters? Well, listen to Padme is how. So I wanted to share why I particularly have really come around to the character and have really agree with Addy and want justice for Padme. Jennifer, what was your relationship with Padme back in the day, and what is it now?
It's very complicated because I was a big fan of Natalie Portman. And so when she was cast, I was really excited because I saw her as an example of a phenomenal actor. And when I saw her performance in the prequels, not so much Revenge of the Sith, it didn't feel like she was able to bring what I so love so much about Natalie Portman. It felt stilted. Looking at it now, I appreciate what she did. I understand the choices that she made based on this character. That is the character, right? She is trying to be this queen. Natalie Portman was 16 years old when she was in The Phantom Menace. And this is where I'm not going to go there yet. I'm going to save it. Natalie Portman has been sexualized and objectified since she was 12 years old. I'm a little bit older than Natalie Portman. And when she was in The Phantom Menace, I got a really creepy vibe that she was being kind of put in this sexual, certainly with Attack of the Clones. Mm-hmm. And it just made me feel uneasy, especially like her, this like weird love relationship with Anakin, this child. The whole thing just made me feel very uneasy, so much so that I could not get past it.
Mm.
Now I can get past it, but I do think that in that DNA, this is the part of the reason why it is a complicated character that they don't bring as much. I'm going to save it because we're going to go down a dark path. So I'm going to save it.
There's plenty of light along our dark path. But I think
bring in the light, please.
Honest and investigatory path, I think, is very good.
Yeah.
Ken, what was your relationship with Padme back in the day, and how did it change for you?
I'm reevaluating it at this moment. You used the term Padme neutral. That's a pretty interesting, solid way to describe maybe what I felt at the time. Meaning, actually, and I enjoyed Natalie Portman's work. It was like cool. Like, oh my god, you know, this up and comer's coming in. Just same with Ewan. Like, it was exciting. And yeah, that was, you know, when you see Phantom Menace and some of the stuff that maybe you'd understand that George was doing, or just the dialogue Addie mentions. I was so into, you know, Anakin and Padme. I didn't pay attention to the dialogue and how it was performed. All those long held conversations over the years. I too, I'm right there with you, Joseph. I think you and I maybe have discovered this side by side, diving into some of the things. I think she's such an important character to the story. I think, the thing of Padme was right is wonderful. I just today before we recorded, I saw a meme flash by me on social media of Sigourney Weaver as Ripley. Like, if she had said, no, don't bring this alien on, and if they had listened to the woman in this case, four or five movies of dead people wouldn't have happened. Just listen to her. And we can make the Ki-Adi Mundi jokes and the mansplaining jokes, but it happens all the way through. And I think, unfortunately, it got boiled down sometimes into a very famous line. I think it's a great line, but this is how Liberty Die was, with thunderous applause, kind of became like one of those, it's sand and da-da-da-da-da, because that's the time it was. But I think the character Padme can rise above that. I was never negative to the character, never disregarded the character, but I think I understood the character a lot more as I got older. And that's where I stand. As far as stuff, you know, Jen, what you're saying is tremendously valuable. Speaks to the time, speaks to what's going on. And I don't mean that in a good way. For a long time, I would list Beautiful Girls as one of my favorite films. I don't know if I do anymore.
Looking back, it's like, yeah. I loved that film. What was I thinking?
Love Beautiful Girls. And then like,
what? The Professional. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And she, you know, she's spoken about this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes, she has.
Because I think you can boil a lot of it down to Attack the Clones and her, you know, shirt getting ripped off. And, you know, I definitely don't think that would happen now. And it was also how, you know, every girl in the mall looked like when I was walking around the mall working there. It just was a weird time period thing. And I think that's too simplified of a way to look at it versus what you're talking about the whole picture, which, I don't think it's a bad thing to go into this dark discussion, Jen, on that stuff. But also I don't want to not highlight how much I just have really grown to love this character and continue to see Padme as important, which is why I'm with Addie on some of the come on, just say it kind of vibes.
Yeah. And I think celebrate what is powerful about the character. Celebrate, I think, the parts of the character that are absolutely in the prequel films, but had the elbow room to be highlighted in the Clone Wars. It's one of the reasons that the Clone Wars animated series is so incredibly powerful to me, that it gives way to episodes that are, in arcs that are long and political. And you see how hard Padme is working to find a good path, and to see how much she's stymied, and to see how difficult it can be to stay true to kind of this North Star, while also being aware of like a government is, you know, ordering one pizza with the same topping for a billion people. It's hard. You have to compromise, but you have to stay true to yourself. And Padme being so central in that, I think it should be celebrated. And I think the character should be celebrated. I want to get to the investigatory path in one second here, but I think since we're talking about this, I think people who are fans of Padme are probably thinking about how she has been celebrated in modern canon. And I know Addie's saying specifically on screen, let's celebrate her on screen. But maybe if you're a little Padme neutral or not sure about Padme, we love those E.K. Johnston books. Those three books are so great and go such a long way to celebrating the perspective of a young woman caught up in, or rather not caught up in, choosing to be a leader and choosing to be on a, you know, galactic stage. Mm-hmm. Padme was centered along with other women characters in the Forces of Destiny animation initially, before Forces of Destiny kind of slid around a little bit. Your mileage may vary. There's lots of Padme stuff in various Vader comics, like the group, you know, fighting in her honor, the Amidalans. I think a lot of that is Padme through the perspective of Vader's torture. So your mileage may vary. The recent Tales of the Jedi was important to me, where we saw Ahsoka attend her funeral. And that great line from Ahsoka is like, I had to be here. She was my friend. And there's such a great moment to like, this has nothing to do with Anakin. This is about these two characters, Ahsoka and Padme, being friends. And as Addie says, the Obi-Wan series, I think, was great. So wanted to highlight that there is some refuge for Padme fans in Star Wars storytelling in more modern canon, but not as much on screen. So Jennifer, let's get into some of your deeper thoughts, and then we'll close out with positive hopes for where Padme can be celebrated on screen in the future.
Yes. Yeah, I'll try and couch it. So the Clone Wars has done a phenomenal job with the character of Padme, with a lot of the female characters, obviously, as I talk about with Katie Lucas. And I think the reason why George brought his daughter, Katie, into the writer's room was because it was all men at that time. And she had an important voice that was needed. And I feel like I can really see that in the Clone Wars. That being said, there is that deleted scene from the Clone Wars season 7 it was obviously never produced, where it's like this pinup art of Padme that was going to be on the ship of the Bad Batch crew, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was, right? And it's like this whole scene about Anakin sees this pinup of a sexy Padme on their ship and is like, and Wrecker's like, yeah, I'd like to do some negotiations with her. The joke is just so it's just so sexist. And thankfully it was deleted. Dave Filoni stepped in and was like, we're not going to do that. But that pinup art supposedly can be seen in Rebels in the background. I think that there's an issue with the people behind the scenes who love Padme, but who sexualize her. Maybe not even like it's in an unintentional way. I don't think that they're meaning to do that, but it's like it's reducing this powerful character, like Addie's talking about, to this pinup art of her, you know, on this guy's ship. And that she's like the butt of the joke, and it reduces her agency. And that to me is just an example of why they have to be very careful with this character. Because Natalie Portman was sexy, and she was a sex, you know, like a not bombshell, but she was like obviously very important for a lot of young people in their lives, right? Who were having their sexual awakenings. And so it's complicated. And anytime, that's why I think the books obviously have done a great job, because you have female writers, you have women in charge of her story, and they're going to protect her and give her the agency that she deserves. So that is my soapbox. But yeah, it's so complicated. And I think things have obviously gotten better. And thank God for Dave Filoni stepping in and being like, that's not going to fly. That's not going to be the last appearance of Padme. So
in the Clone Wars. Yeah. And I think it feels like he has said this in interviews, that he has such a firm line with the Clone Wars, where George's story is George's story, and he's not touching anything with Padme in Revenge of the Sith. He's not going to try to put a spin on that, you know. So
exactly.
And I think, you know, he uses Anakin and Obi-Wan as much as he can, but also is not going to touch, or, you know, I think the biggest sort of color he gives to anything in Lucas's story in that final season of Clone Wars is the implication that Obi-Wan wanted Ahsoka to reach out to Anakin, and that little hope that maybe their bond is enough. Like, that's as far as he would go, I think, with coloring any choices that Lucas has made, which I think also sort of boxes in, you know, There's lots of storytelling that will let you see things, parts of Star Wars in a different light in there. And I think Filoni has been very protective of that. What George said in the prequels is what he said, whatever you think that is, period. Which I think is powerful. The other thing that I'm really thinking about as you're talking, Jennifer, is in a lot of the books, the E.K. Johnston books, also Brotherhood, the focuses on Obi-Wan and Anakin, but there's some great Padme stuff there. And the reason I remembered the Brotherhood novel is in the E.K. Johnston books and Brotherhood that deals with the early part of Padme's, you know, relationship with Anakin. I think there's such importance in distinguishing the idea of Padme as a romantic character with a vibrant internal life who is in love with and hot for bold, daring Anakin, who a story of a character who has made the choice to make her entire life about service and about in the guise of Queen Amidala, literally, you know, putting herself behind a role. She's the role. Of Amidala and continuing that up to a point as a senator, allowing herself this freedom of expression of personal desire and of sexuality of her own with Anakin. And it is great to be able to get that, but distinguish this idea of a romantic character who has agency over her own romance and sexual interest in love interest in Anakin versus the sort of misfired parody of the rest of the galaxy objectifying her. Like, and that to me is what the thing is with that of the, if we want to do a satire or a criticism of the way the galaxy works, a prominent figure like Padme might be objectified by a random clone trooper. Great. I can buy that that's a truth of the galaxy, but what does it do when we just sort of throw that in as a side joke without examining it or without creatively saying anything about it? Is this an episode about
right about
objectification
and gender roles and things like that? Yes, exactly. That's the problem with satire. If you don't actually, you know, provide context and talk about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Ken, what are some of your thoughts on this idea that Jennifer's raising of Padme maybe carrying still some of the complexity of those years?
I agree with it. I think you're both saying wonderful things here, and I'm trying to make sure I wade through it in the right way for myself. I think a lot of it is you must handle it in the right way. I think sometimes there's a surface. I don't even know if it's right. Like you mentioned Jar Jar, midichlorians, and Padme. I think you're correct in that being kind of this trifecta of this lingering thing that people who aren't engaged with it like we are just kind of like, well, we all agree that sucked, right? Like it still has that. That's why I mentioned the Liberty Dies thing. That kind of, I don't know why. I think it's a great moment. But obviously, if you're just passing through, you don't. So it's like, how do they work through that? How do they get past that kind of stuff? And who's handling the characters? And you mentioned like Clone Wars season 7 stuff. I don't know how much I remember that deleted scene, that conversation. Like, I don't know how much was left over from what was before or new added in. And you want to make sure even people with the best intentions might not understand what they're doing. That's why I think your perspective on even the Phantom Menace is clear. To be blunt about the time, and I'm sure this hasn't gone the way I gone away. I don't think the internet's cleaned up since 1999. but there was this was the time, and you're going to say, Ken, how do you know? Well, I knew because it was passed around and emailed, and everyone knew there was a website counting down to Natalie Portman's 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. A running clock and a Kournikova too in the tennis world. Everyone counted down. It was just this lad culture ran supreme, and so the one of the things trying to maybe to look even positive forward is like you've got an author like E.K. Johnston. Why I really love those books, and I know maybe not for everyone, blah, blah, blah. Why I love those books is E.K. Johnston is a Padme kid who was inspired by everything there, but also is able to acknowledge everything that's around the character because she lived it. She saw it. She felt probably some of the same things you're talking about, Jed. Same things Addie felt. Loves Revenge of the Sith, but how do you reconcile that and not to – write it off, change it, fix it, but just be like, all right, this happened. What do I take from this? And those books, I think, are testaments to someone being inspired and finding a way to continue to be inspired while also dealing with or addressing the things that happened before. So I think that's how you go forward a Padme prequel, you know, Mace and Padme get de-aged and thrown in Disney Plus. It's like, oh great, but what do you actually do with that? And what you're trying to say with the character is where I go. Anyways, I don't have all the best words in what you're talking about, Jen. I think you're right, because it's not even just a sign of those times. It's a sign of the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Hunter from Bad Batch had a good line of dialogue about Padme appearing in the future. I'm paraphrasing, but from the most recent episode of Bad Batch, about when Crosshair is apologizing to him, and Hunter basically says, like, yeah, we've all made mistakes, but all we can do is try to be better. Yes. And I feel like there's plenty in Star Wars that has been complicated. I think it gets ignored because we just all make a joke out of it. But yeah, it was pop culture fodder. I was alive. Who is it's a love triangle. That's one of the great things about Star Wars. It's also a love triangle. Is Leia going to fall for Luke or Han? Does she like blondes or brunettes? That was a common conversation. They're like, whoop. Oh, they're siblings. And that's long forgotten. And we joke about it, but like, that was messy. There's, you know, I think Star Wars has been doing cleanup on, Star Wars has such a heart of empathy. And then every once in a while, maybe there's not something empathetic in the storytelling. And then Star Wars has taken some time to maybe address that a little bit, like the amount of respect and perspective that has been given to the Tuskens, you know, after being just sort of this one specific kind of trope and stereotype that served its, you know, narrative purpose in earlier films. Now, all of which to say, for me is like, I think you're extremely wise, Jennifer, to think through what is complex, what baggage might be attached to the discussion of this character. But for me, that's all the more reason to be like, well, then take a step forward and do better. Let's honor this character and let's do better by the character is what I hope for and am excited for. Any other big picture thoughts before we talk about possible justice for Padme on screen?
No, I one thing, and maybe it's even towards after that. I don't know. I like Natalie Portman has mentioned, you know, a red carpet interview or whatever, these kind of dumb kind of clickbaity kind of interviews to get out of, you know, would you do a Padme? Sure, I'd come back. Like, you know, it's 2 seconds, but it becomes 20 think pieces. But I like that kind of stuff. There was an era where all the cast, we've talked about all of it, they didn't weren't free to acknowledge it in their souls, the prequels that they existed. And then Natalie Portman goes on SNL and does those Lonely Island rap videos. And, you know, it was different time maybe, but I love those clips. And it's like, oh, you know, she's not ignoring them. You know, just today's recording, Clayton Sandahl, one of the last newsmen that we know. He's such a nice dude. Interview with Jake Lloyd's mom that's going around. I haven't even had a chance to really dive into it. Like, I know it's not from Jake directly, but it's I like that, and that gives me hope for what we could do in this prequel generation kind of taking over, and to know that Natalie isn't like, no, that's, oh God, I would never revisit that. It's like, no, this character, that character was, I gave a lot to that character. I like that. That gives me hope for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good perspective. I have a list of places I'd like to see Padme possibly pop up, or think that she could. But Jennifer, I want to start with you. Do you have what for you would be like, would make you celebrate a new dawn for Padme on screen? Either Natalie Portman appearing, or if it's an animated show or whatever, or just a character being named and celebrated the way Addie's talking about it. Just literally, like, we're asking for everything from Natalie Portman returns to just say her damn name. What for you would be exciting? What would you want?
Well, give us an inch, we're going to take a mile. If you say her name, then I'm going to want you to actually show Natalie Portman. That's how I feel. So, you know, personally, I would love to see Natalie Portman come back. I don't know how that would, I mean, obviously the de-aging, I don't know. She's such a phenomenal actor. And I think about like Hayden Christensen and how his performance now as the character is so rich and deep. I don't want to say he's grown into the character, but it's just like, it's some of his best acting work, in my opinion, when he came back. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see Natalie Portman back as the character. I don't know how, and I don't want it to be for just one scene. Mm-hmm. I want it to be a major storyline. You know, one last thing I'll say, I love George Lucas, and he reminds me a lot of my dad, and they're of that era. You know, he grew up on these serials, the Lauren Bacall's, Humphrey Bogart, that style of cinema. And so I don't think that he went in being like, I'm going to objectify women, right? Yeah. Or, he's not some like sexist pig. He is an incredible man who is just of that time period. And that's why I think his relationship with his daughter, Katie, is fantastic, because she is like on the opposite side of the spectrum, you know, riot girl feminist. And I think that maybe now if he were to do this stuff, it would be different. And I do think that he has grown, and I'm sure that she's told him a lot about you know, female roles and gender roles and things like that. So I love George. I don't want to say anything, you know, to slander his brilliance, but you know, there's some things where I'm like, that's a little questionable.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can certainly say, you know, as a creator, we evolve. And sometimes I look at an old sketch and like, I thought I was just reflecting the world around me. And maybe I was, but maybe I could choose not to, or maybe I could reflect the world the way I want it to be. Or maybe all this input I got about this is the way the world is, maybe it was wrong and I should have questioned it. Like, we got to give people, I think, a chance to evolve and grow and learn.
Yeah, we're all learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So here's some ideas, and then Ken, I'll pitch to you to wrap us up for Padme appearances. I think seeing live action Natalie Portman, if Ahsoka season 2 does deal with Ahsoka going on some real you know, journeys in mystical realms, I feel like there is room to see a vision of Padme in a Mortis like world between worlds space. I think it makes sense to me for Ahsoka as a character to review where she has been, and if her journey takes her in any way into a sort of, your end game is to become the mother of Mortis, to be a person of duty and responsibility. There's every reason that she would think of Padme, an older woman, an older sister figure to her, a mother figure to her, who exemplified some of these ideas that have become really important to Ahsoka. So I could see a live action Natalie Portman popping up in Ahsoka season 2. In future seasons of Tales of the Jedi, I believe that that Filoni will not rest until he eventually gives us scenes of Ahsoka meeting Luke and Leia for the first time. Mm. And I think when we ever get those scenes of Ahsoka meeting Luke and Leia for the first time, I just feel like it's so important for Ahsoka to say, I knew your mother and father. I knew who they really were as individuals, you know, and you both have every reason to focus on the horror of the discovery of, you know, who your father was, but you have the joy of who your mother was, is, I think, a way to really celebrate Padme by name. In any project, animated or live action, if we go back to Naboo, there could be, you know, some celebration of Padme on Naboo, particularly in the post-imperial times. I think there'd be some honoring of her on her home planet. Mm-hmm. If there ever was a Luke Ben Solo animated show like lots of us discuss, I think discussion of Padme would be great for young Ben Solo, who's obsessed with his legacy, for him, for Luke to talk about who his ancestor Padme was there. Final thing for me, big hope, because it's the biggest of big screens, New Jedi Order. Rey also has a reason to talk to Jedi that she might be training about legacy and about her journey with legacy, and that the Skywalker twins, again, were, yes, children of Vader, but also children of a hero named Padme. It doesn't feel that far out of the realm of possibility of what Rey would understand to herself about legacy and might need to pass on to the younger generation. So that's my laundry list of Padme possibilities. Ken, what are your Padme possibilities?
They're all right in line with yours. I mean, we always have joked for a while of the campfire conversation between Luke and Ahsoka, and a lot of the focus of that was, hey, you know, let me tell you, Ahsoka, about my father's final moments, your friend's final moments, and you can tell me, you know. But yeah, well, you got to he asked Leia about his mom, their mom, mm-hmm. right? Like, and why wouldn't he ask Ahsoka? That makes a lot of sense. Any point in time with Leia, this is, you know, Ahsoka season two, the adventures of young Leia, where Ahsoka shows him there. I don't care. I think you have a good spot to mention. In terms of like Natalie Portman returning to the role. Yeah, we know now there's a lot of possibilities. We got a world between worlds to play in. We have a lot of things going on. And whether or not it's realistic, whether or not it'd be completely needed in the story, I think so. But whatever. I just – there would be something pretty spectacular seeing Hayden and Natalie in a dream, a vision. I don't care. But to see them on screen together again. Ooh. Now, I want to acknowledge carefully long-held rumors, and there's just that, of yeah, they had dated during Attack of the Clones. The breakup was bad. It's you got to be careful with those rumors because they often too easily, more often than not, cast the women as the crazy. She's crazy, and I want to make sure I'm not going that direction. But there was a long time held that they didn't even want to work together. Then there was another rumor that I believe strongly that they had her, Natalie Portman, for a convention. And her and Hayden and everyone's going to be on stage together. And it was good to go. And she was like, Hayden's there, I'm there. And I think at the time she was pregnant and couldn't travel, you know, for good reasons. Mm. And so that – when I heard that from some folks, some friends we know, I was like, that's great news. That's great news because time is – we're 25 years on. We're 20 years on from these films. Mm-hmm. That to see those two performers together again, because what you said, Jen, is 100% true. Hayden's best work as Anakin was Ahsoka to me. And he's done – I'm looking back, like a lot of the stuff more than I didn't back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. God bless it. That work in Ahsoka was so good. Imagine them together. It would just be fun. I think it would be important. I think the conversations, dreamlike or not. Maybe you don't have – we keep saying de-aging. You know what? Maybe it's her as she would have been.
Yes.
You know, here's what could have been, you fool, because you messed up and Anakin's got to deal with that again or something. Mm. There's a lot of ways to do it. That don't have the perfect writing structure idea behind it. But I would, as a fan, would take great joy, just like we took great joy when that door opened. And the face of Ahmed Best was staring at us in Mando season 3.
Yeah.
My God, a vision of if Padme lived with young Leia. My God. Oof. Yeah.
Vivian Lyra Blair and Natalie Portman, some dream sequence. Star Wars, a nerd chill extravaganza.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer, do you have any final thoughts on justice for Padme?
I want justice for Padme. Thank you, Addy, for this. This is really fascinating to think about and something I had not really thought about, but it kind of was bubbling in the background where I was like, yeah, Padme's kind of, besides, you know, obviously the Clone Wars, Forces of Destiny, which I loved, but it is kind of funny how she's, well, not funny, it is kind of weird that they don't acknowledge her more. Why is that? There needs to be a deep dive investigative report on this.
I know a reporter. Sandal. No, I know. I know she's putting out great videos on Force Center's channel.
This would be like a hard copy kind of episode. I don't know if I could. I'd have to do some people in the shadows. Well, we know what actually happened.
Yeah.
Disguise her voices.
Yeah. And one, you know, hopes that at this point in Star Wars, right now, that with the massive resurgence of prequel love and the goodwill tour that Hayden and Ewan have been on and Ahmed Best's return to Star Wars on multi layers. And, you know, he put out that Instagram of he's got them mocap balls on for something. A video game is what his hashtag would like.
Yeah.
That I want to believe that in this moment right now, there is every possibility of justice for Padme and that it is just the right moment, the right project, that this is the time and that I'm going to have hope for myself. Excellent. Yeah. All right. We will take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back to continue our Cues of the Everything. We had a great essay and a great discussion about Padme Amidala. And now we are going to talk about this question from Justin Jacobson. Justin says, great podcasters. I am once again moved to call upon your knowledge and love of that galaxy far, far away. One of my favorite aspects of contemporary Star Wars storytelling, like Andor in Rise of the Red Blade, is the relatable villains. I can see my own frustrations and struggles reflected in those of Cyril Karn and Iskat Akaris and empathize with them. I cry for them and with them as they get absorbed by anger, where I submerge into sadness and learn from their mistakes. Which Star Wars villains do you relate to the most? You know, I just looking through the questions thought, let me pick two of the lightest, easiest, non-complicated Star Wars questions I can find for a light Monday morning chat. This is a great question, though, Justin. Thank you very much for this very thoughtful question. I will say off the top that I have not read Rise of the Red Blade yet, and I've heard nothing but great things about it, and I'm excited to dig in and get that perspective. for anybody listening on the podcast side, Jennifer has physically leaned away from the microphone, and Ken is in classic hand on beard, middle-aged man thinking pose. So I feel guilty asking either of you for your opinion because you're both using the I don't know where to start with this one body language.
I don't.
So Ken,
if I haven't upset you now, I'm gonna upset you now.
Jennifer, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm gonna accuse Han and Leia of being bad parents. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going, folks. If I haven't lost you now. Before. So I'll just want to acknowledge Cyril Karn, great character. Love him as a character. What a, and his mother, Edie, great villain character. Dedra Miro, phenomenal, super relatable, you know, fighting her. Where I'm like, she's just trying to do the best she can. She has to prove that she's better than everyone. Oh, but that means that she's going to go after my heroes. Okay, maybe not. It's so complicated. But for me, I love Kylo Ren. I love, love, love him. He is one of our best modern day villains. It was a rocky start, I will admit, with The Force Awakens. I was not sure, but I didn't realize where Adam Driver was going, where Rian Johnson took the character, and now he is my favorite. I'll save the accusations for the next section.
So, sounds good. I really like that Jennifer has organized her notes for this episode into the most explosive, the most dangerous parts of my notes. I think that's just like, it's so fundamental in the DNA of Star Wars because of Vader being centered and, you know, becoming the father figure by the second major piece of Star Wars storytelling, and having that, could he possibly be good, has created, you know, this great rich history of saying, and I believe this about Darth Sidious. Other people, you know, disagree. I don't think anybody's just born cackling and rotten. Like something happened to that guy. And unlike some of our other villains, he just never looked back and just wouldn't. That's his weakness. And that's why he has been mutilated or destroyed by his own lightning multiple times. It's a, it's a non-subtle metaphor. But yeah, having this just rich pantheon of relatable villains is one of the things that I love the most about Star Wars, because I think it reinforces the morality of anger and fear and continuing the cycle of trauma that was inflicted on us. These are risks that we all face every day. And it feels so good to give in to anger. Do we want to? And I think, so I think I relate to almost every villain that Star Wars tells that story of, man, those are the moments where I chose the dark side in my life. Given in to anger. Cyril Karn, I think he is so fascinating because he's so within the fantastic world of Star Wars. He's pretty ordinary right so far, you know, like we haven't seen him do any sort of, he's not a space fighter pilot or that, you know, he's an abused adult child. And as we all discovered, during Other Center over the summer, we all have some issues with moms with strong opinions. So I think we all are probably, you know, relate to the Cyril Karn being, victimized by a cruel mother. But for me, the big one is Ben Solo. The big one is Kylo Ren. So, Ken, that's my preview thought. We can get into the why of why Ben Kylo is speaking to both Jennifer and myself. But Ken, where do you go? Who is your most relatable villain?
Yeah, because I mean, Kylo Ren, Ben Solo is absolutely one of my favorite characters in Star Wars. And you're right, Jed. And Jed, I bet you were one of the ones that snickered when he took his helmet off for the first time and that beautiful, you know, feathered hair rolled out.
I did. Was in the theater. Chuckled.
I was in the theater and everyone laughed. He's fascinating. I can't wait to talk about it with y'all and find out where you relate to. And this is that thing is, who do you relate to the most? Like, there's some moments with Cyril Karn where like that breakfast table sounds familiar. And there's characters I've talked and celebrated over the years. My weird kind of connection to Moff Gerard. Like, I don't know if that holds up as much anymore, but I love the character and I've talked about him before. So I was trying to. This was hard. I was rolling down the list of like, who do I actually relate to? Right now there's something Crosshair has become one of my favorite characters, but I can't say along the way, you know, when he's just killing people that I'm like, I've been there, but his redemption and him explaining it, at least, you know, it's been handled so well. And some of the conversations he already has had with Hunter in that last week's episode of perspective and kind of, I was a good soldier. And that is something I relate to in some ways, but I don't know if this would have been my answer a couple of years ago, but I look at Orson Krennic and I look at Ben Mendelsohn and what he brought to that role.
Yeah.
And I also look at, and this is an in joke for a lot of old Star Wars pundits, but like, I look at Catalyst, you gotta read Catalyst. Yeah. It just painted this picture that I'm not in an empire trying to get a couple rows closer to my emperor. So I can build a ball of death in the sky. That ain't my journey. But this guy, he was like, I'm trying to do what's right. I'm trying to get credit for what's mine. I'm doing whatever else is doing, but everyone's moving forward. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with them? And how that can poison the well. And that you could take that different spot. Cyril's a character that's almost like you're on the cusp of looking around and going, I'm part of the problem and I want to be better. Instead, you're looking around going, I want to be part of the problem more. Right? That's Cyril to me. And you're Deidre Mayer's going on, but I have not been the only woman in a business meeting. So I think I want to leave Deidre's connection to other folks. But yeah, I thought about this overnight. I think that's why I took Orson Krennic. And I hope to God he's in Andor season two. I've not heard anything about that. There's no Stellan Skarsgård hasn't slipped him. Ah, is it a scene with Ben Mendelsohn? Like we haven't heard that. None of that. But it's like a perfect opportunity to get that guy back into Star Wars and exploring the ins and outs of that character. Where at the end of the day, he's wrong and he's a villain in Star Wars. But what got him there and that this is you're standing on my achievements. Like, oh, I love that scene. That's why I think I've never had a super big problem with the Tarkin stuff. Because I'm like, that scene is so spectacular to me. So at the end of the day, I want a cape and I want to be Orson Krennic.
I love what you're saying about Krennic. I think that he is a great picture of ego, in concert with that ego is a sort of the banality of evil kind of thing of like, we live in the world we live in and it's naive to think that we don't seems to be the excuse that he uses for what he is involved in. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite Krennic lines in moments is, Galen has a line of you're confusing peace with terror, paraphrasing, so that might not be entirely accurate. But Krennic's like, you got to start somewhere. It's kind of like a funny comedy line, but I feel like that's a great insight to the characters. He isn't Palpatine. He's like, I've thought about it. I've studied it. I am a master of, five-dimensional hollow chess. Yeah. I want this because of my personal philosophy. He's not Vader. He's just a guy who wants the biggest promotion and the most attention and the greatest 401k in a world that he chooses not to question.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, what? This is the world, this way it is. There's a real focus on security. So I got into the security field. All that stuff's not my problem. Yeah. I only care about, am I going to succeed at my job? Mm-hmm. So I got to ask Ken, how do you see yourself in that?
I see it in a lot of my pursuits. And yeah, you mentioned the security field, but there's that angle too that I worked for a long time. But that was the day job. But I see it in this frustration of I'm in the system, I'm in here, and I'm looking around and I'm doing what I feel needs to be done, but I'm not getting the full credit. And instead of looking at myself and what I can do better about it, I watch so many people pass me in stand up. I watch so many people get onto Saturday Night Live that used to be my buddies and I'm not there. And da 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 da. And that it just consumed me. And so the Krennic staring up at the Death Star, the thing that he pinned his entire identity on and having that beat knowing it's about to destroy him was a reminder. I mentioned again, but it's like that's why I love the journey of Stannis Baratheon in Game of Thrones, because it's like it's a reminder to me. You might start from a good spot, but if you don't question things along the way and you get so hung up on what you feel you deserve, you're going to lose yourself. And it should be horrible and it should be bad. And you will do horrible things if you don't get a hold of yourself and pull back. And I think Krennic in a three-act movie structure way figures that out. And at that moment, and he's not like peaceful. He's not like, oh, the island. He's angry. That goddamn Tarkin took my thing and now my thing's going to kill me. And he doesn't get it to the end. And I think that's where I see myself along the way. I sometimes get overly bitter at not what other people have, but why don't I have that too? That's where I
sit. It is true that, we're the object of this debate, not a giant death ball to control the entire galaxy through terror of being destroyed. It is a real dick move from Tarkin. Because Krennic's put in a lot of work. So I can see that. Like, this is, I put in so much work. That makes a lot of sense. It's very insightful and extremely funny to imagine Krennic lying there on that broken radio tower and looking up and seeing not the Death Star, but a scene of somebody else on Saturday Night Live. Too accurate. Jennifer, I definitely have my Ben Solo Kylo Ren thoughts, but I would love to hear yours first.
What I think is interesting about Ben Solo Kylo Ren is that the scary thing about him comes from his insecurity and lack of self-worth. And I think, what makes me think that he's not a stereotypical villain or like a villain in our world, like a Jeffrey Dahmer or somebody who commits heinous crimes is that he's not a sociopath. He's able to have some sort of reflection at the end and have some awareness. He's even kind of aware of that what he's doing is wrong as he's doing it. You can see the conflict. Kudos to Adam Driver for showing that. I mean, that's that's incredible. So then I go, well, how did this kid, young man, end up in this way? And I think about, was it Last Shot where we kind of get a little glimpse of Han and Leia's relationship and Han not knowing what to do with his baby? I mean, I'm sorry, but Han Solo, he's a scoundrel, a lot of fun to watch on screen, but he'd be a terrible dad. I don't think that he's emotionally available. I don't think that he was probably sensitive. I think Ben Solo was a sensitive kid who needed to have more... who needed to have more love, more like attention. And I think his father didn't give it to him. His mother was too busy. No slight against working moms. They're doing the best they can. But I think that he was probably one that just would act out and nobody knew what to do with him. So they're like, we're going to send you off to military school, AKA your uncle. We're going to send you to your uncle. Rather than being like, why is this kid so upset? What, you know, he had a lot of pressures, a lot of expectations on him of living up to his parents' legacy. He was angry. You know, maybe he needed medication. Maybe he needed therapy. Like, there's a lot of things that could have been done to intervene before he started doing these crimes. And so that's kind of where I just think about it, real world. And I'm like, I don't want to say his parents failed him because that's not fair. I think that they realized how much trauma he had until it was too late. And unfortunately with kids, you get like 8 years where they listen to you. This is what all these parenting books, it freaks me out.
You
like,
got 8 years.
The kid is shaped. The kid is shaped.
Yep.
And if you're not in there, like being emotionally available, giving them the love that they need, by the time that they're 12, 13, that's it. That's it. I mean, not to say that people can't change, that people can't have redemption, but, you know, he's done such horrible things. Like, oh my gosh. But he's not a sociopath.
No,
I find relatable.
we'll come back to how all that is relatable to you. But like, that was never on the table of like, yeah, how many of us have murdered and feel bad about it?
You know.
I relate to not being a sociopath.
I'm not a sociopath.
I love that when we have conversations like this about Star Wars that are taking the sort of the mythic in the fantastic and really applying them to very, very real world.
yes.
No, but I think that's a legitimate way to look at it you know, what is this standing in for in real life? And I think you describe the characters. I understand him absolutely, very emotional, needing things that maybe he wasn't getting. Maybe he's getting so much love from Leia and not enough love from his dad, and feeling like by being with Luke, this isn't about me as a person. This is about me as a legacy. This is me about my abilities. This, I guess I'm supposed to be a legacy. I guess that, you know, all those things. And then on top of it, you've got Palpatine making this mental connection and whispering in his ears as Snoke for years. And to make it a real world thing, it's like these well-intentioned parents and uncle aren't quite giving this kid what he needs. And then they have no idea that he's discovered 4chan and that's where he's getting emotional support. I think Palpatine whispering in his voice is like he's on 4chan and they don't know what is getting dumped into his head of like, do you feel weak and unloved? Here's how to fix it.
Yes.
Prove your strength to everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's what's so fascinating about this character is that we can hold it up and examine it in a real world way, which you can't, like with Palpatine, like certainly in the prequels, I felt like that was very real world. The way that he was so manipulative and things like that. Obviously, as he becomes the emperor, it's hard for me to think about like the real world aspect of it, right? He's becomes more pulpy, as we've mentioned. Sure. But with Kylo Ren, you can kind of draw these parallels, but you put it in this wild galaxy with lightsabers and all these fantastical things, and yet we see it in our world. That to me is fantastic storytelling. That's why I love Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, and the sequels. Just all of it, just chef's kiss.
No, I really, really strongly agree with that. The reason that Kylo Ren came to my mind, Ben Solo, is because I do think that he's, as much as people love him and Adam Driver as an actor, I don't think the sequels are given enough credit for the nuance and what is new and fresh and of the moment and so deeply painfully true about Ben Solo. And I think I see myself in him because I agree with your assessment. I think he is a good person who got wounded early through no malice, but just life. And I can relate to that. Like, I have a really good relationship with my father, but my parents were very young when they had me. And I didn't always have a great relationship with him because he was a little like Han Solo. He went off to play drums in the weekend and he loved me, but he didn't know quite what to do with me sometimes. I remember one time when I was about 8, I think, I just had this like epiphany of like, wait, you didn't decide to love me because of who I am. You're just my parents, so you automatically loved me. So how could you know that you love me, Dad? And he had like come home from working and he's just like, that's not the way I think, kid. I don't know what the hell you just did to me. Like, so
eat your hungry man dinner. What are you talking? What are you doing?
He really was like, let me make you some mac and cheese. Wow. I don't know. I just love you because I do. And like, you know, and we have a great relationship now. But I was a very emotional kid who maybe wasn't always getting exactly what I needed, blah, 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 blah. So I think that he is Ben Solo's portrait of a person who became afraid of rejection. Nobody ever rejected him, but he was afraid of the possibility of rejection, of not living up to the legacy, of not being wanted by his parents, even though they clearly loved him, even though Luke was twisting himself in knots internally to be the best master he could be. He was loved, but he was so afraid of not being loved. And then that becomes a fear of being weak. Am I as powerful as Luke Skywalker? Mm-hmm. Am I as great a pilot as my father? Mm-hmm. Am I as, you know, emotionally present and beloved as my mother? If I'm not, then everybody's laughing at me, at my failure, at my weakness. Mm. And for me, you know, I think it ties very much into the generation that I grew up in, where I absorbed lots of definitions of what it is to be a man. And I thought I was dealing well with those things. And when I look back at choices that I don't like that I made, they all go back to the fear of rejection, the fear of they'll see that, they'll think I'm weak. They'll think that I don't belong. So all of the anger and the lashing out is this desperation to prove that you're strong, you know, and he doesn't need to. He is, and he can't see that. He can't accept that. And he buys this lie from Sheev 4chan Palpatine that being strong means being totally alone and totally in control of everything, and it is all these toxic masculinity traits, including and up to, you know, this idea that he knows, he understands himself, he wants and needs love, he wants to go back to his mother. As soon as he starts making mistakes, he's like, I want to go back to my mom. He's believed a lie that kind of connection is weakness, so he's going to show the galaxy what a man he is. A big, strong man who doesn't need love. But then, of course, he does, which is what's so great about the Rey stuff, of just desperately reaching out for that connection that he does need. And then on top of all that, and I'll wrap up, you know, one of the lines that haunts me from Kylo Ren, because like with the tiniest slip, you know, that will be me, that lightsaber, it belongs to me.
Yeah.
This person who claims he wants to reject his heritage.
Yeah.
But he sees but everything about it should be his. And like talking about Star Wars and having a moment where like people don't understand who Boba Fett is. I grew up with Boba Fett. I'll tell you like, no. None of this belongs to me. It is for everyone. But the instinct to cover up any fear of weakness, fear of rejection by owning something is so strong and so slippery, and I think really well represented in Kylo. Of I'll just be alone and control everything, and then I'll be strong, and I'll never be sad. And oh God, this is awful, and I want to be free of this pain. Mm-hmm. So that's why I relate to him.
Yeah, he just needs to learn that he's Benuff, and and that's the lesson that is there in that movie for a lot of people.
And it really is. And that's and he makes that stronger choice of like, this was all garbage I was filled with. And connection does not make me weak. It gives me strength. And, you know, Rise of Skywalker might not be a subtle movie, but the messages it has to share are extremely profound and extremely in line with everything Star Wars has built. And I love that. Those moments for him. Jennifer, I so process Kylo Ren through feelings of ideas of what it means to be weak and what it means to be strong. How do you analyze the character incredibly well, but how do you see that in yourself?
I see it as he equates his self-worth with his achievements, with his talent. Mm-hmm. Everyone praises him. You know, he's so talented, so gifted. That's why he's going to go be with his uncle, right? And I think that he doesn't believe it. He believes that he falls short, or he believes, I don't know, or maybe he believes that he's better than they're telling him. I'm not, but I feel like he's just so wrapped up in his performing, which is what I was told as a child, which was, you know, playing piano very well. I was always trotted out, and she is playing the piano. And so you begin to equate your self-worth. And when you don't get those accolades, or you don't feel, or you see other people who are better than you, and you're like, oh, I'm not as good as them, then you start to either become sad, angry, depressed. And so for Kylo Ren, for Ben, I think he becomes angry. And like you're saying, he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to show you. I'm going to be the most powerful, and I'm going to kill my dad, and like all these things, because he doesn't actually believe it himself. He has to do these things to make himself believe. So he has to cosplay with his ridiculous mask to be like his grandfather. You know, it's just, it all comes from his own deep, deep insecurities. And I think if you're a child who, I don't want to say a prodigy, but if you're a child who's told that you're really good at something, and then that's why you see it with a lot of child actors, why they struggle, is because at some point it can go away, and that F's you up big time. Or when everybody catches up to you and you're just like everyone else, right? Everyone else who's 18 and who's talented. It's like, you know, so anyways,
yeah,
there we go.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, the storytelling in his arc, I think, is all so, it all connects so well to me of believing that lie that this is what strength is, up into the point of like, if I just do this one final thing, the biggest rejection I can think of, of caring and love and reject my father, and wait, that didn't fix me. That didn't prove to everyone I'm a big, strong man forever. And now I have to look for something else. It's so well done. So well done. Any final thoughts on relating to villains?
Yeah. And I want to say, I'm definitely connected to Kylo. Based on you guys are both saying such wonderful things that I'm nodding my head along to. Along the way of the Force Center journey, I once described him as a pastor's kid, which I am not. But at the time, I had a lot of people in church and still in the ministry reach out to me and be like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. A somewhat forced legacy, a somewhat forced, unnaturally not chosen pedestal that you are now on and that your parents are now on. And that kind of connects, and there's some of that stuff there too, and I love it. This is what's there in that character, and for both of you to take equal amounts of inspiration, or at least not inspiration, but well, maybe he ends well. to connect with is what I'm trying to say. It speaks well to the character, speaks well to what Adam Driver brought to it. So love what you said, and it's fun. I think this is we're going deeper as we do because we're Force Center. But I think write a villain who thinks he's the hero of his own story is a bumper sticker bit of screenwriting advice, but it's true. And I think sometimes the conversation gets lost. It's why I don't think Anakin should be studied. Vader is cool. I collect Vader figures still to this day. Because they just look cool. Of course they do. Darth Maul's cool. Dooku's pajamas are cool. It's all there. But I think at some point you have to, pop culture, you know, at some point it switched. I mean, again, we grew up, this could be longer winded. Sorry, I'll cut it. But like, we grew up, Joseph, we grew up, and Jenny, we grew up. Luke Skywalker was the boring choice for a lot of people. Not for you, Joseph. Right. But for a lot of people, he was the boring choice. And I remember the first time I started hanging out with Mark Ellis, he's like, he saved us. He's not boring. But it was just like, it wasn't cool. He was a straight-laced little boy doing all his homework. Ain't nothing good about that. And look at pro wrestling when it switched and the tweeners and Steve Austin and The Rock were bad guys, but you cheered for him. Like, society's got a wound that we have to continue to heal from. And analyzing why we relate to the villains should go deeper than just like, you know, they look cool. They have a cape. And I'm not saying other people are doing this, but I love this conversation. That's my final thought on it.
Yeah, no, it is really important. I think I love having empathy for the villains and really understanding why they made the terrible choices, and then feeling, you know, horrible that they're making bad choices, that, you know, this isn't a like, and Kylo Ren and Vader were right conversation. Yes. It's a, this is why they made those horrible choices. Those choices are horrible. And when they had the strength to allow connection, and they had the strength to not care whether anybody else thought they looked weak, that's when they had joy again. Like, that's the lesson of these villains for me. And like, I want to get to that part of the lesson and skip the horrible decisions part, if at all humanly possible. My final thought on this is, you know, Kylo Ren's definitely my number one relatable villain. Runner up is the B1 droid that Asajj Ventress throws in the Clone Wars movie. And just because she's angry and Izzy's falling, he goes, why? Any final thoughts from you, Jennifer?
No, I just have to examine my Raylo ship. What is going on with that? Got to unpack that in another episode.
We got another Jedi beat coming, everybody.
Oh boy.
I think justice for Padme and which villain do you relate to is enough complicated, difficult conversation for one episode. So we'll leave the Raylo alone for now. Come back for our 62-hour episode, wrestling with the complexities of Raylo. No criticisms there, just complexities. Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
Yes. Hello. Hi. Goodbye. We're Force Center. We're here on Twitter, Threads, and Instagram at Force Center Pod. We're on our Facebook as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available in a lot of different spots as a podcast. Just search. You'll find us. And merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly as we set up top at patreon.com/Force Center. And if you're like, man, they went deep on this and you're kind of discovering us because maybe Jedi Beat brought you in, hey, this is what we do. Go to our Patreon page, and you want to hear Joseph and I go deep into what Casino Royale has to say about men and society. We had a lot of fun doing that one there. It's on our Patreon page. You can follow me at Catnapsuck or go to my website, catnapsuck.com, for more. From there, you can link to tickets for a upcoming comedy show in Boston at the Rockwell on April 6th. Mark Ellis headlines, and I feature, going to be a lot of fun, my first trip to Boston. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
Oh, fun. You can find my less controversial takes on Instagram at Jennifer Landa, YouTube at Jennifer Landa, my TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. I dive into all things pop culture, 80s and 90s, and of course, Star Wars.
Joseph, great stuff. Let's both go have some cereal with our parents and try to make it positive.
Things are much better these days, much better across the board. So, working to make those connections. Anyway, you can find me on most of the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm spending a lot of time on Blue Sky. I'm on Threads. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Instagram. So if you'd like to find me there, I continue to miss the more robust community since people are kind of scattered across all those social media. So, hey, if you want social media to be part of your life, jump on board and find me there. I miss hearing the thoughts of as many people, which is something I didn't expect to say. But hey, like Star Wars, I want connection. You can also check out my blog, my newsletter. That's called Finish Your Monsters. New issue of it out every Tuesday. Like I said, that's called Finish Your Monsters. You can find it just by Googling Finish Your Monsters and my name, Joseph Scrimshaw. More short film news coming up very soon. But that is it. We have Aid the Cube.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.